A lot of you are working from home right now during this pandemic, COVID-19. You can stream us from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app. You can enable your Alexa skill or Google Home and ask it to play 102.5 The Game or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. Fourth and final hour here on this Tuesday. Darren, Donick, and Chase, we say hello and good afternoon to Terry McCormick from TitansOnline.com. Terry, how you doing?
Or Titans Insider.
What did I just say? TitansOnline.com. My goodness. I will say this. I was trying to cram a little food. I'm a little lightheaded. I need to eat something, and I'm going to use that as my excuse for my brain right now. Sorry about that, Terry.
That's okay. By the way, Titans Online has now transitioned over to TennesseeTitans.com. Did you guys know that?
No. This week?
Yeah, it is.
Last week, I think. Still working last out week? Some of the kinks, according to what Jim Wyatt told me, but they are changing the name.
Wow, okay. So it's going to be TennesseeTitans.com. .com, okay. Very good.
What do you make?
Let's just start with the draft is going to take place, which is great for what we're doing, right? It gives us something to talk about, write about, and it's going to go as planned, but it's going to be different. And we're in a world now of, you know, Zoom calls and Skype and all that good stuff. That is our video conferencing, WebEx. That's what everybody's using to have their meetings, and that's going to be no different from the NFL. And the news came out yesterday, like, they're not going to have anybody at the facilities. Everybody's going to be on their own. One, how the unique challenges of these teams trying to pull that off and do that and not be in a war room, how weird is that going to be, you think?
Oh, it's going to be crazy. I mean, because, you know, on the one hand, just put yourself in John Robinson's shoes. There's going to have to be one conference call where you're in a meeting room with your scouts and Mike Vrabel and maybe some of the assistant coaches that want to have input, because if you're going to draft a linebacker, you're going to want Shane Bowen's input on that player, that sort of thing. So you're going to have to figure out a way to do that. Then you're going to have to figure out a way to get in touch, which I guess can be done with a simple phone call, to make trades to move up or back in the draft. And then you've got to get on conference call with the league in order to announce your picks.
Yeah, boy, that's a lot of juggling. That's a lot of craziness going on at one time. You know, there's been a lot of concerns, as you can imagine, here in the last 24 hours of teams saying, I don't know if people are all directing this toward the New England area, the Foxborough, the Boston area, or if they're actually concerned about the whole league. But people getting tapped in and basically checking out the way people are going to be conference calling each other, like I said, through technology. What do you think the odds are when the draft is over that somebody's going to accuse somebody of doing that?
It's very possible. I already saw that John Harbaugh is on guard, saying that he doesn't want the Ravens playbook or their draft board to end up being hacked and in the possession of some other team. So, you know, I never really thought of that, but I guess it's possible. And like you said, there's a certain group up in the Massachusetts area that's been known to do things a little underhanded from time to time. So maybe that might be where they want to watch first.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of people that will have those jokes ready, right? come draft time.
You know.
Where do you think John Robinson and that staff is right now? Do you think they have – I know it's a unique situation, because whenever you have maybe a higher pick – sometimes you can safely predict, like, what's realistically going to be there for you. But when you're picking 29th, how do you do that? Like, how do you know? And there's going to be 28 picks in front of you. Do you think they have an idea of where they're going, or maybe at least the position in the first round? And if so, what do you think it is?
Well, you know, the logical thing would say right now, cornerback, especially if Logan Ryan doesn't end up back on this roster. But I think they probably have a pool of players that they would feel comfortable with taking with that pick. And I also think, you know, remember, John Robinson comes from the Bill Belichick school of drafting, which if you're picking low in the first round, which they are, you know, what do the Patriots usually do with that first round pick? They deal it, and then they turn it into second and third round picks, and then they wind up having eight or nine draft picks in the draft as opposed to just the customary seven. Because, and the reason I think that they do that is because in most drafts, most GMs will tell you that there are usually about 20 to 25 players in a good draft that are true first-round type players. That the difference in player number 29, where the Titans are picking, and player number 42 is probably not that much different, except that if you draft a guy at 29 and he's really not a first-round commodity, you're still on the hook for first-round money. You're still, you know, you've still got to deal with that fifth-round option and all that stuff. So you're better off recouping more picks, trading down, and picking the same guy somewhere in the 30s.
That's a good point. We're all looking forward to that. And Terry, as we sort of put your last couple answers together, the logistics of trading, I do wonder how that will work with everybody theoretically in their own homes, right? Not in facilities. How quick can you pull it off? And will they think about maybe giving extra time between picks to just because maybe the process of communication will be slowed down?
Yeah, you almost think they're going to have to. And that's, you know, not going to make for good television, because already, you know, you see in the first round and sometimes even in the second round, sometimes there's a lot of filler time put in between picks. So, but, you know, given the circumstances that we're facing, I would think that, you know, they might have to give an extra couple of minutes, especially, you know, if trades start factoring in and teams start wanting to move up or move down, and sometimes you're having two or three conversations at once if you're trying to auction off your pick, you know, multiple teams may be calling you. So it may be a situation where they have to, even though, like I said, it probably won't make for great viewing.
Terry, you know, in looking at the days ahead, I do wonder, if I'm a general manager, I would certainly want to know as much as I possibly could about, you know, especially key free agents that you're going to invest a lot in. We know that the situation is open right now with Logan Ryan and even Jadeveon Clowney, for example. Do you feel like those two in particular, the big name guys who are going to get some money, will be signed by somebody by the time this draft starts?
I don't know. I mean, because here's the thing. You know, if you've got to give that guy a physical, especially if you don't know him. I mean, obviously with Logan Ryan, they know him. They know what type of situation, you know, he was in. They know he's probably whatever, as healthy or healthier than he was during his exit physical. If the Titans went back out and signed Logan Ryan before the draft, wouldn't surprise me. Would shock me if they signed Jadeveon Clowney before the draft, because there's no way to get the guy a physical. There's no way to be able to sign off on him and have your doctors do the legwork and be able to do what the due diligence that needs to be done. So, you know, it's unfortunate for guys like Clowney, who may have kind of priced himself, you know, with his health situation and the contract demands, may have kind of priced himself into a corner right now as he's kind of waiting to see exactly, you know, what his future holds. Now, I mean, the only team that really holds a key for Clowney is probably the Seahawks, because he was there last year, and they should know better than anybody what his medical conditions are. So if they're comfortable signing him, they could probably go ahead and do it. Any of the other 31 teams, I'm not so sure.
Terry, a very important final question before I turn it over to Chase. I noticed that the season is underway in our What If Sports League, your 70s Yankees, and of course you're a veteran manager, are 1-1. My 80s Mets are also 1-1 in a series against the Astros down in the Astrodome to start things off. But this is what we've been reduced to, right? Simulated games. I'm very excited about this 24-team field.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. I looked at the box score just a little while ago. My first game, 78 Ron Guidry got the job done, but 75 Catfish Hunter got roughed up a little bit in the second game. I play in the 70s Pirates, so going against Stargell and Clemente and Rennie Stent and those guys, you know, they can swing the bat.
Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com, hanging out with us. And I'll have to check that out. I haven't seen that yet that you guys are a part of. So I'll have to look at that. Even though a lot of those teams were before my time, it would be fun. But yesterday, Terry, we had Jeff Fisher on to talk about, you know, memory lane. And I asked him about Derrick Henry and his thoughts and how he would have handled that situation back when he was a coach. And I thought the first part of his answer that we have for you was actually pretty interesting because of the relationship that he had with Floyd Reese. Here's what he said.
You know, I was really lucky to have Floyd there with me because my philosophy as a head coach was that I wasn't going to get in the negotiation. Basically, it ended up being, you know, we would talk, yes, you really want him back? Yeah, I really want him back. Man, okay, we'll do what we can to get him back. And, you know, he would usually get it worked out. But from a coach's perspective, you know, it's not on either side of the spectrum. It doesn't make sense to ask a guy to take a pay cut or to get a guy to do a deal, and then you come back as a head coach and you want to ask him to play hard for you. So I stayed out of those. But Floyd, for the most part, got those things done.
So I bring that up because I, you know, and we know that things changed over time with those two, but I look at Mike Vrabel and John Robinson now, and I feel like that they have been on the same page pretty much since they got together. And this is obviously a situation where they have to be, where, you know, the money has to be fair. But I thought, to Jeff's point of, you know, being the head coach and asking a guy to, if he takes a pay cut, then to go play hard, you know, what does that do? So what do you make of the relationship between the head coach and the GM in a situation like Derrick Henry's?
Well, I think they probably are handling it similarly. I think Mike Vrabel is going to stay out of the negotiating talks and let John Robinson do his thing on that, because I think they probably communicate, much like Jeff said, as far as, you know, which players they feel like are vital to the roster, which guys they want. Obviously, they feel like Derrick Henry is the guy that they have to have on this team in 2020, and rightfully so. But in order to be able to keep him, they had to use the franchise tag. And, you know, Robinson said that, you know, they're going to try and work out a long-term deal if they can. They got until July 15th to do that. And the fact that Derrick Henry has already signed the tender is a good faith move on the part of him and his agent, Jimmy Sexton, because that means that he won't be holding out of camp. He won't be, you know, walking in the Monday before the first game and saying, "Yeah, I am, I'm ready to go," and then wind up getting hurt. In terms of, you know, I think the best philosophy with Vrabel and Robinson on this is just what Jeff said. Coaches coach, GMs negotiate, and players play. And then, you know, and then the other part of that equation is when it comes down to business, the player usually defers to his agent. So, you know, the coach has the GM, you know, to do his work for him. The player has the agent to do his work for him.
What does your gut tell you? Do you think by that July 15th deadline, they have a long-term deal in place?
I think there's probably a decent chance of it, especially with Henry having signed the tender. If things were acrimonious between the two, I think his agent, Jimmy Sexton, would probably have advised him not to sign the tender and to hold out and wait until the last minute. I think the fact that he signed it probably is a positive sign that they're going to at least work toward trying to get something done.
Terry, do you think that, I know this was brought up last week on the conference call with John Robinson, that they haven't made decisions on fifth-year options? I would say, at least for Corey Davis, they're probably not picking that up. Dory Jackson, who knows? But the receiver position, to me, is one they could tinker with because they haven't gotten exactly what they expected out of Corey Davis. Do you think it's a position that they might look at in the draft, or possibly if there's a free agent out there after the draft, they might look at that?
Well, it's a deep receiver draft, and I think that's one of the things that the Titans probably will look at and maybe take advantage of, because the one thing in this offense that they've been missing is a guy who can just run straight down the field, take the top off the defense. I know we saw that some with Khalif Raymond this, you know, earlier this year, but he's not a real big size guy. He's about, you know, I can look him straight in the eye, so he's 5'9" on his best day. So I think if you can find a guy who can, you know, take the top off the defense and got a little bit more size, if that guy's there in round three, round four, why not take a chance on it? Because you're already down a receiver from having lost Tajay Sharpe, so you know that there's at least a spot on the roster to add a wide receiver. I think, with the Corey Davis situation, if I'm John Robinson, I probably decline the option and let Corey Davis show me that he's worthy of a contract extension rather than using that fifth-year option. Now, with Adoree Jackson, I know he's had some ups and downs, but I see him – I see more ascent in his game. I think he's improved quite a bit from the time he got here. There's still things he can work on. I'd be more inclined to give him the fifth-year option than I would Corey Davis if I'm choosing one or the other.
Terry, good stuff. I was planning on going to New York City to see your Yankees and Willie's Mets in late June, early July, but I'm not sure that's going to happen. In fact, I'm probably
not going to happen. Connor and I were supposed to see Yankees and Twins on May the 27th. Doesn't look like that. Doesn't look too good for that happening either.
No, probably not. Probably not. Hey, thanks for doing this. You and the family be safe. We'll talk soon.
All right, thanks.
Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com. We'll come back. Field Yates, by the way, at the bottom of the hour. More of Darren Donick and Chase next. Adam Silver coming out, the commissioner of the NBA, saying that they're going to be waiting until May to kind of come out with their next response to something. So nothing out there on the NBA front, saying it's going to be a while before they come out, even though Major League Baseball has gotten out that they have focused on some plan in the Phoenix area for a May return, which would be not only a return, it would be a start to their season, because Major League Baseball, of course, has been delayed. They never even got things going. The NBA and the NHL, a little bit different dynamic as they try to figure out, can we even do this? Can this even happen? Is there even going to be a finish to 2019-2020? Or do we have to start focusing on next season? So we'll see what the NBA has up their sleeve, I guess, next month when maybe something will come out on their front. Meanwhile, UFC, by the way, Dana White, we've talked about wrestling and mixed martial arts right now, still trying to keep their sports going, doing things a little bit different. It's a little bit different dynamic. Because it's a smaller group, it's a smaller operation. You're talking about a one-night event, okay? It's not a season. It's not playoffs with rounds and, you know, best out of this. It's just a one-night event. And so it's a little bit different. Plus, I will say this. I haven't watched any of the wrestling stuff, and I know, Chase, you have.
Yep.
But wrestling is a unique dynamic. Really, the UFC, too. Like, both their fan bases are rabid fans, and the fans, the interaction with the fans is a part of their is a big part of their broadcast, right?
Yep. Oh yeah, it's
and so
huge.
How weird is it to not have the fans in the stands when it comes to wrestling?
It changes things a lot. That's why I brought it up with Dan Wetzel when we had him on earlier, because he wrote a column about that. I didn't know Dan was a wrestling fan, but. He wrote a column about how it was just like the matches were good. And like I said, I watched WrestleMania and I watched some of Raw last night, but it's just very different because the fans make it, whether they're chanting things or they're booing, you know, the bad guys or cheering the good guys or, you know, a lot of times when somebody's out there cutting a promo, you know, they're talking to the fans and the fans are talking back. Stone Cold Steve Austin had a thing that he always did. Whereas, like, you know, if you want Stone Cold to do something, give me a hell yeah, and they would chant hell yeah. I mean, you obviously don't have that anymore, and so it definitely changes. Now, the other thing that they've been able to do, because they have their own facility, is, like, WrestleMania was taped over Marquise, I think it was, like, 3 days that they spread it out.
Well, they started taping probably, like, last Wednesday is when they started, and they finished up probably that Friday or Saturday because there was, like, a rule in Orlando to where it was, like, now everybody's on lockdown, so they have to, like, finish up filming.
So they've taped, I think, their shows a couple weeks out, so they have content that they can run. But that's another thing that, you know, we haven't that's good. That would be different. You can't really do that with baseball and hockey and all of that. It'd be really hard to tape delay it. I guess you could, but if you have media there, you know, they're there to report. With wrestling, because it was their own facility and they only had essential personnel, they were able to tape this in advance and keep it under lock and key and the results not get out.
Yeah. Speaking of fans, I don't know if you guys saw this on Notre Dame's athletic director, Jack Swarbrick. He said he just doesn't want football games in empty stadiums. His quote, "I don't see a model where we play at least any extended number of games in facilities where we don't have fans. College football is about the cheerleaders and the band and the campus environment on game day. We're interested in solutions that allow us to have a traditional game day experience." There's somebody right there that just doesn't get it. It's like, well, no.
Come on, man.
Blank,
wake up.
Dude. I mean, seriously? Just college football. So you're the only sport that you know, just, yeah, we need the fans. Like, we got to have the cheerleaders and the, you know, the band and stuff. Like, we have to have. It's like, what rock are you living under, dude? I mean, what a ridiculous statement. But that's an athletic director at Notre Dame. I mean, well, no bleep, Sherlock. Oh, you want the fans? You want to play in front of fans? Well, really? Huh. Well, son of a gun. I didn't even really think about that until you put that out there.
Nobody else
so you
would
guys, want
to play in front
no,
of fans.
No, just
yeah,
you
like,
guys.
Come on,
college
man.
Football. That's the only ones that would like to play in front of the fans. I mean, golly. You just shake your head when you read stuff like that. Like, wow. Really?
Yeah, that's just silly. I mean, look. It's like I was saying about wrestling. It's different, but I still watched it. They still had the matches. It would just be, you know, I mean, I would watch a football game. I was prepared for us to all be at Bridgestone Arena doing our jobs, covering a Preds game, and nobody being there and fans not being there. I was like, all right, I guess we're doing this. I guess this is probably how this is going to go. And it didn't get to that point. It would have been weird. We would have spent a lot of the show talking about it, but everybody would have done it because that's what you would have to do. And so I know it's not ideal. I know nobody wants that to be the case come September, but if that's how you get the games played, then guess what? That's what you're going to do.
I mean, that goes without saying. I wonder how many other coaches will fall into this trap. I would hope that coach got a call from his media relations guy within 5 minutes. Dude, come on.
Why'd you do that?
Let's get real here. I mean, we all want to play with fans. We get it. But
Willie, this is an AD. This is an AD. Notre Dame. I mean, to make a statement, I mean, golly, it's just so ridiculous. Like, how do you, as somebody higher up at that school, not just call Jack Swarbrick and just say, what are you thinking? Like, what in the world? Why would you say that? In these
and who
times,
is he getting his information from?
To come out and
like,
say,
I haven't seen too many. Most college campuses, at least it seems to me, you know, have a little bit more access and information from health experts because a lot of these schools have hospitals, you know, and are working with. I mean, these are places of education who have also gone through the real struggle of. After spring break, for example, trying to bring the students back on campus or having it start before the kids went on spring break. They're already having to close. So there is a process that has been gone through. I would think that information is filtered to most of the athletic officials, if it hasn't already. But I don't know. Where's that guy coming from? How can he not know this?
He says that how does college football operate if several states are in the position where they're not prepared to allow college football to be played, but other states are? Schwarbrick says, my sense is everybody has to be able to go. There aren't very attractive versions of this where you say, well, schools in 30 states will start the season, and those in the other 20 won't. By the way, Notre Dame is set to start their season. You remember where they're supposed to start?
I don't.
In Ireland.
Oh, yeah.
In late August.
That's right.
You know what, though? This is,
I'm going to say
this is something that I've seen discussed. I've seen this discussed a lot, guys, in the articles regarding college football. And, you know, Tim Brando has used the term a lot, czar. College football needs a czar, you know, somebody that makes the call.
Yep.
And it doesn't really have somebody that does that because college football is sort of run, you know, there's the you know, the bowl games and the, you know, the college football playoff, but the committee doesn't really have the jurisdiction. But think about this, okay? Notre Dame, let's say by the time the season is ready to roll around, they say, you know what, we're okay. Our campus is okay. We're ready to play. We want to play. And whoever they're going to be playing in, you know, September 15th, they've got a whole set of issues on their campus that's keeping them from playing. So what do you do, right? There, every campus, there's so many. There's hundreds of schools. Let's just take football. There's how many Division I schools? 115 or something like that? You know, 115 schools are not going to be all in the same part of the process by the time the season rolls around. That's going to make it very challenging.
We'll come back. Field Yates from ESPN on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good day thus far. We always like our conversations with Field Yates. Does a tremendous job of covering the NFL for ESPN, and he is on the line with us. Field, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well, guys. I appreciate you having me on, and I'm sure you guys are doing a great job of handling the adverse circumstances that we're all fighting through today.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And right now, the only saving grace is that we get some NFL news, and certainly they've been operating their offseason. They'll continue to operate their offseason towards the end of this month. You understand the dynamic of those war rooms. How bizarre is it going to be, knowing after yesterday's news, what we've learned in the last 24 hours, nobody's going to be at the facilities. There are no war rooms. It was already weird as Nashville hosted the draft last year, as you know, to know that there weren't going to be fans. That whole experience was already going away. But now you've got everybody separated. What are some of the challenges that presents?
Yeah, and by the way, do I hope Nashville gets a draft again in the future, because that was insane last year.
So do we.
Great job. It was an exemplary, really an exemplary job and commitment by the city to host that event last year. It was amazing. It's different. It's no question it's different this year in a lot of ways. And, you know, the reality of the first round is that a couple of things. First of all, teams have stacked their boards enough and have played out enough contingencies that they probably have a pretty good feel of a pocket of players that they're sort of evaluating. So for the Titans, right, you're picking in the 20s. Like, you know, you're not sitting there sort of concerning yourself too much with what happens with Joe Burrow, right? I mean, that sort of is a different level of drafting. You don't need a quarterback, as it were. But there's going to get to a point where John Robinson, and we know he's not afraid to be aggressive in the draft, is going to have to sort of look closely at the move up, the move down scenarios, or the stand pat scenarios. And during the first beginning portions of the minutes they have on the clock, I don't think teams are totally concerned, right? But it might be the back 5 minutes of pick 29, if the Titans do stay there, that get a little bit dicey, right? Because, for example, pick 29, and for that matter, 30, 31, 32, are often a time when you see a team try to trade back up into the fifth round if there's a quarterback that's still available so you can secure that fifth year of the option. If it's a player that you just feel is really, really spectacular and you want to get back in on night one to make sure he's not available, that's where I wonder how things will go or how smoothly things will go, not for the Titans specifically, because I have no doubts about their front office infrastructure and it being one of the best in football, more just in general, right? Like, what happens if you're in the middle of a trade negotiation with the team and next thing you know, there's 3 minutes to go on the clock and one side or the other loses connection, whether they're doing the call over Zoom or Skype or whatever, or maybe things just are a little bit unconventional. That's where I think things get a little bit hairy and tricky. But it's all 32 teams playing on a level playing field. So I suppose in that sense, there's a little bit less concern.
The other part of this field is, as you know, they haven't been conducting business as usual because some of the pro days didn't finish, the private visits, some of the things that would have been taking place while we've had NFL news. It's affected free agency. For example, Clowney, who may be in the Titans' plans, may not be, but because they can't do that much-needed physical on him, that DeAndre Hopkins trade hasn't even been made official because of the physicals. The same holds true for the draft. It's not been normal the last month or more when it comes to this time of year for these NFL front offices, and their scouting departments. So how much do you think that affects this year's draft, or does it?
Yeah, I think it does. Now, again, ultimately, I think players that are good enough to play in the NFL are going to find their way into either a training camp or a roster at some point. And so guys that, like, I don't think there are a ton of players during the pre-draft process that go from completely off the NFL's radar onto the radar. There are definitely guys who improve their value. It might go from undrafted to draftable or things of that nature. But I don't think there are a ton of players who were previously off the radar entirely who make their stock in the months of February, March, and the beginning portion of April. So along those lines, I still think that some of the hidden gems that we've seen over the years that have been discovered through pro days can still be discovered. It might just be that they get to training camp, assuming there's no off seasons, OTAs, et cetera, as an undrafted free agent, as opposed to a sixth or seventh round pick. But it is different. Scouts and coaches are creatures of habit, and so this has really been a test. By the way, us in the media are creatures of habit as well, so it's been an adjustment for us. But it definitely has an impact, but I do still believe that, you know, these scouts and coaches and GMs are really good at their jobs. They're still going to have the ability to evaluate in enough ways to make sound judgments and decisions during the draft.
Field Yates is with us, NFL insider for ESPN. And Field, first let me share my disappointment alongside of you as a guy who went to high school in Orlando and used to drive over to an occasional game at the Big Sombrero. I was a little disappointed that the Buccaneers didn't have a little more orange in the uniforms. I saw that they unveiled what they're putting together.
Yeah, and, you know, I think what happens when we hear new uniform is we expect dramatic changes, and this felt like more of a modification, right? It didn't feel like a wholesale switching up of the uniforms. It feels like the biggest change is that they had the, as everybody calls them, the alarm clock lettering for their numbers in the past on the front of their jerseys. I guess on the back of their jerseys, too. That is gone. You know, I was having some fun and noting that I would have loved to see the creamsicle uniforms come back. That was not the case. But maybe what I'll have to do now is hope for the same thing with some of the other great retro uniforms, whether it's the Chargers, Powder Blues, or others that I think belong as full-time uniforms for their respective NFL teams. So I didn't have a major issue with the Bucs' new uniforms, but I think for those that were looking for a little bit more sizzle, they're probably saying, these look kind of close to where they were before, and they kind of look like either the Falcons or the Texans jerseys as well.
Yeah, I do think they're better. They're cleaner for sure. They got a little bit busy there trying to incorporate a lot of different things into the last run, so I do think they've improved. So, Field, you just sort of hit on this. It's going to be different for everybody, of course, and how they cover the draft. So what have you been told that your role will be while the draft is going on? And so how will you what are the logistics for you, and how will you conduct yourself?
Yeah, so I was scheduled to go to Las Vegas, and over the past few years I've been a part of, and I'm sure you guys have seen the digital streaming shows we do on Twitter and YouTube and things of that nature at ESPN, and I think a lot of other companies as well. And obviously Las Vegas is off the board. So we're, to be honest with you, we're still sort of figuring out our plans right now. And we have what's called a TVU app, which is sort of our home studio setup that a lot of people have seen on a variety of programming. So whatever I do, it'll most likely or almost certainly be from the confines of my apartment. It's different. We're figuring this all out. So I've been following the reporting on the broadcast and how that might look, and then on a personal level, still figuring out myself. So it'll be a fascinating couple weeks ahead as we continue to lay not just the plans for the NFL and teams, well, I guess those have already been laid, but also for ESPN.
We're talking to Field Yates from ESPN, NFL insider for them, and haven't had a chance to talk to you with some of the Titans' moves. We'll start with Derrick Henry, because we've talked to a lot of people over the course of the last few weeks of, you know, their thoughts, and I think the general consensus is you got to pay him. Now, he signed the franchise tender. They have till July 15th. Do you think they get it done, and what do you think a fair deal for him would be?
Yeah, so it's a really fascinating conversation. And, you know, I'm on the record, and this is not a specific Derrick Henry conversation. It's just a philosophical belief I have, and that you have to be kind of careful in paying these running backs, right? It just, I'm just staring at the body of evidence, right? I mean, Todd Gurley cut, David Johnson traded, Le'Veon Bell, the Jets tried to trade him like 6 weeks into his tenure. There's a lot of evidence that suggests that some of these running back contracts will not age particularly well. So I think you have to, there's a very fine line, and this is why John Robinson's a lot smarter and better at his job than I would be if I had his job, of figuring out, all right, how much do we pay Derrick Henry? Because we know that the brand of football we want to play, he is sort of emblematic of, right? We're going to wear you down, and we're going to run right through you and over you or around you, whatever it takes. Well, also understanding that first, you got 53 guys you have to pay each week. Your quarterback is now being paid a lot more per year. And I understand that Ryan and Marcus made a good amount when combined last season, but now Ryan is making whatever it is, $29 million per season. And you've got a lot of other really good players on your roster. And then also just understanding that, you can't just let talent walk away, which is why I thought it was really smart, actually, that if they, and I don't know that they did specifically prioritize a long-term deal for Ryan before Derek, which is why Ryan got it done and Derek ended up on the tag. But if I had to play out a tag for 1 year at one position or the other, I think it would be the running back spot. Again, just going back to what I think about how paying a running back can be one of the trickier things that a GM has to juggle during his decision-making process.
Do you buy into the notion, Eddie George told us last week, that Derek's a unique back, he's the focal point of the offense, so you have to pay him as such? And that's factoring in that, A, Eddie George played the same position, so of course he's going to take up for his guy, but also factoring in what history has shown us with running backs. But do you buy into that notion that the Titans don't necessarily have a choice, they have to pay him as such because the offense centers around him?
It's a really interesting dilemma, and because I think back to the AFC Championship game, guys, and this is weird because it comes across as a slight at Derek, and it's not intended at that. It's just an observation. When they get down by 10-plus points in the fourth quarter to the Chiefs, Derek is not on the field, right? And doesn't it feel like a unique commitment to make to somebody at, let's say, $10 or $12 or $15 million per season, if he's also not going to be there at a crunch time moment, right? That's why John Robinson's making the money to be the GM, and I'm the guy that's just evaluating it from my position. But I think that in general, running backs have been proven to be a more replaceable spot than other positions across the NFL landscape, which is why, I know Derek mentioned the Zeke Elliott contract during the Super Bowl week, and I think $15 million per year is a lot of money for any running back, and that's why, I think you just have to be mindful of all the other guys that you're going to have to pay if you do make that kind of commitment at that level for a running back.
Last thing quickly, Field, we've had some pretty spirited debates on this show about Jalen Hurts at the next level. Where do you stand on Jalen Hurts on Sundays?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. He's a player that I've been studying, actually, as today was actually a day that I've been sinking my teeth into him a little bit more. He's really unique, obviously. Production has been next level. He's got immense football character, right? I mean, the guy showed that. He showed leadership even in a backup role during his time at Alabama. Played really, really well for Oklahoma this past year. Is he nearly the thrower that some of the other top prospects are? Not yet. Not right now. And I think that he would be two things. I think if he's going to play as a rookie, it's not like in a part-time joker role, but I think it's a role where it might, like, I don't think he's your every down quarterback as a rookie, but I also think that in time, we have to believe in the development of players. And heck, the Titans know that better than most because their own head coach was a guy who needed to develop, right? I mean, Mike Vrabel, his career with the Steelers was what it was. And then he becomes one of the most important players on three Super Bowl champion winning teams. So you have to believe in player development. And that's the reason why I think that with development, Jalen Hurts could become a player that is close to he could be your starting quarterback. I think it's going to have to be in the right set of circumstances, but I would not count him out just based off what I know about his character and his overall determination to be a great pro.
Interesting. Hey, keep up the good work on ESPN. We'll be watching, and thanks for doing this as always.
All right, guys. I look forward to talking to you a lot because I am a big believer in this team being there for a while, and the leadership is in place, the players are in place, and a city that really deserves success.
Well, we agree with you wholeheartedly. Thanks for doing this. Stay safe. Thank you, Field.
All right, guys. Take care.
Field Yates from ESPN. Good stuff from him. We will come back and wrap up Tuesday's show next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good stuff from Field Yates. Nice music bringing us back. They are rocking and rolling right now on our brackets. The right side business is picking up. A lot of you are voting. This is good. We've got just over 7 hours to go before we close up shop, and we will have this, our bracket, down to 16 athletes. But you guys are voting. There is a lot of action on Sonny Gray and Victor Arvidsson. A lot. The 5 versus 13, and right now Sonny Gray with 53% of the votes, Victor Arvidsson trailing with 47%. That has totally flipped. Victor Arvidsson was winning there for a while. I'm just giving you the ones, most of the other ones. By the way, John Jenkins just continues to chip away. He's still a long ways to go, but Johnny Cash, VU23 on Twitter, now 21% of the votes. I think when we brought him on, it was like 90 to 10, and now it's, 79 to 21. So I'm just saying, there's been a nice little charge there by John Jenkins. And the other one is Derrick Henry and Philip Forsberg continues to remain close. Derrick Henry, the 2 seed, the heavily favored 2 seed. Philip Forsberg now with 46% of the vote to Derrick Henry's 54. Like I said, the other ones are still, they got a lot of work to do. Drew Maddux has got a lot of work to do. They're up 35%. Delanie Walker at 14% versus Pekka. B-Hop at 25% versus Mookie. Kevin Dyson was 64% of the vote over Blaine Bishop, who has 36%. That could be a 14 seed getting into our Sweet 16. Mike Fisher just dominating Kimo Timonen, 84% of the vote. And as I mentioned, Eddie George was 79% over John Jenkins. Keep those votes going. Go to thegamenashville.com. And on Twitter, at 102.5 The Game.
What about the swing of the Sonny Gray-Victor Arvidsson matchup? That was 65-35 when we started the show in favor of Arvy. And Sonny Gray has turned the tables. He's gotten some
engines
working.
And there are a lot of votes, by the way.
The
a
big
lot
red
of
machine,
votes on that matchup.
Yeah, 500 votes already. This is really good. Yep. That's on pace to be right up there with the highest ones. And once again, we want to emphasize, if you vote for one, vote for all of them. We want to make sure everybody weighs in. This is a lot of fun. I thought the Fisher versus Timonen one would be a little closer myself.
Now, wait a minute. Now, I've just noticed something on this poll, and I'm gonna call conspiracy with our program director, Ryan Porth, because we have a red here. If you notice, under most of these, it says 7 hours and 8 minutes left. But under this one, it says 19 hours.
Wait a minute. How's there 19 hours left in this thing? Wait a minute.
Is he making calls to Cincinnati to try and get Sonny? You know,
I don't know. Quite honestly, I don't know that he would double cross Arvy like that, though.
Well,
he likes Arvy too. Maybe it's to accommodate the Swedish audience. You know, they're on the time difference
true.
There.
It's true. That could happen.
I was actually thinking with the flip, the way it's been, that he was just going to shut that one down and leave just the other polls open and shut that one
down.
2 minutes
left.
Yeah, say two minutes
left.
Happen.
Yeah, I just noticed that. I'm like, what is going on here? I mean, this is almost as big as when Kelly Holcomb tried to pick a game that had already started on Silly Underdogs.
Yeah, that was this is very true. By the way, how good was Field Yates?
That was awesome.
He was really good.
That was great. That was great.
Really, really good.
What a good
also,
I mean, I do think you're going to continue to hear this narrative a lot with the Derrick Henry situation, that he's not on the field all the time. He's not a three down back. And then the whole big picture thing of you don't pay running backs in general the big money. And so it's a tricky negotiation. I do think John Robinson is very well aware of all of these things. But I do think that there is a lot of sentiment of the Jeff Fisher of, hey, you just have to do it. He's just that valuable. I know he doesn't play on third and long. He's never going to. But that doesn't mean he still doesn't have a gigantic impact on every game.
Yeah, I just don't see that you have a choice. I mean, that's what I've been saying. He is the focal point of the offense, and your hope is that Tannehill's going to repeat what he did, that A.J. Brown's going to repeat what he did, that you're going to have another receiver step up, whether it's Humphreys or Corey Davis or somebody else that you bring in. But it all starts with Derrick Henry.
Indeed,
but the sweet spot is the key. Like it, yeah. The good thing is he signed the tender, right? So
sure. Worst
case, you know, he's in. He's going to play for the season. But the tricky thing is finding that happy median of the right amount of money to invest long-term to where he's happy, Derrick Henry's happy, satisfied, and not disgruntled like it can become with a lot of star players, especially running backs. You take it all the way back to Emmitt Smith, one of the first guys I ever saw get the franchise tag. I don't even know what the franchise tag was until that happened. So it could be tricky. You got to find that happy medium.
Congratulations to Kentucky for winning the national championship. John Calipari gets his second one. We'll break down the first-round matchups of the Stanley Cup playoffs starting tomorrow night. So we'll get into all that tomorrow. Wouldn't that have been fun to say? Or at least for me. Just having fun. Those are things that we could have been talking about. I don't know who would have won this past tournament. By the way, go do the brain teaser. Have fun. We'll have another good one tomorrow. That's going to do it for our show today. You have a safe and wonderful Tuesday. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We shall see you then.